Thank you for the first term. We've circulated our agenda. We've got adoption of the minutes. These are the minutes of the first meeting. You'd note that subsequent to that meeting, we held joint meetings. So myself, together with Co-Chairperson Mole Moropa, are waiting to have on the 22nd, let's see when we come to the program. We'll have joint sitting, so we hope in joint meeting, we'll hope that we'll get those minutes adopted in that meeting once we're done with the ICASA meeting. But that's why I just have to explain, this is what will adopt those minutes. And then the next one is the second term program for the committee, which I hope members received, was circulated. And then we've got briefing by the committee, research on the orientation paper for the new members of parliament. This document was available and circulated to members earlier, but because of the pressures of having to deal with budget votes, we put it on hold. So our committee researcher, Mr. Nene, will take us through his the presentation. Just take us through and to assist us to know where what fits in, especially after the proclamation. I'm not so sure if all members have been able to see the proclamation by the president with the entities that falls here. So we'll definitely take through that, maybe just to highlight what is in this portfolio. It's obviously the Department of Telecommunication as the inherent department of DOC. So majority of the staff that falls under DOC would fall under telecommunications, the old DOC. And now, with the entities with us now, or within this portfolio, it's Centec, it's USASA, we've got CETA now, we've got CETA SITA. We've got .za domain name. How many now? Four. Post Office and Services, and then INGAV. So those are the ones. You'd know that initially there was an indication that there's a likelihood that Infraco will come here. Infraco has remained in trade enterprises. They are not within this portfolio. There was a bit of issues around ICASA. ICASA is with DOC, but because the work is extensive, I think when we have time to engage with the minister, we'd have to understand how they intend to work with ICASA as it's at DOC. So those are the things that I just thought, as we start in my opening remark, let me reflect on them. There's the agenda, members. Can I get any indication of adoption of the agenda? Or if there's anything that members want to... Honorable Tikeledi.
I move adoption of the minutes.
No, the agenda.
The agenda.
Any second, huh? Okay, Honorable McKenzie, seconds. Thank you very much. Members, we have our short minutes. I hope members have managed to check them. We'll move firstly for corrections in page one. Any corrections? Page two, any corrections? Page three. Okay, page three is almost the signatures. Without any corrections, can we move for... Have a mover for the adoption of the minutes? Honorable McKenzie, second. Honorable Maseko. Thank you very much. I don't think, members, there's any matters arising because this meeting was mainly to elect. So we'll move straight to dealing with the program. Shall I request how we deal with the program? We've got the program. I think I'll just take you through each page or what we are envisaging to do, and then we'll get comments, and if there are additions or something that we need to remove or add, then we can deal with that. In terms of the program members, as I said, it's the draft second term committee program or plan, and this would become a final document once we have adopted it. That's why it's still a draft. You'd note that we are coming there. We've got 2 weeks that we are going on, 1 week of recess and 1 week of constituency work. Is it recess or leave and constituency work? So we are starting with our Friday on the 22nd. I have received a letter from the House Chairperson of Committees indicating that the office that is responsible for institutions supporting democracy in Parliament is coordinating a meeting with all the portfolio committees and all the institutions supporting democracy. And we have been allocated to meet. We'll have a joint meeting with the Committee on Communications for the 22nd of August. That meeting will be led by the House Chairperson himself, and then ICASA has been invited as the institution. So that's the meeting that is driven by the House Chairperson. The intention is mainly to make sure that as members we understand what institutions supporting democracy are, how Parliament is expected to relate to them, and what are the mechanisms and all those issues that we need to deal with, mandates, relations, building stronger relations, and the accountability. And you know that that's one of the things that has been strongly emphasized, that Parliament needs to make sure that it strengthens its relations with institutions supporting democracy. So that's the main reason of that meeting, Honourable Members. Then we'll move to the following week. We'll have a meeting. Here will be the briefing by the Minister on progress on the establishment of the new department and legislative program. He has to understand how is the configuration happening, how far are they, what is still outstanding. But secondly, because our task is mainly on legislation, is also to say which are the legislation that they are intending to introduce. Because obviously if you note that with the changes of the department, there might be needs for technical amendments on certain legislation. So we would want to have that program so that we can do our own planning as well as the committee, because that will affect all our work. So that's why we think that this is important. Then again, the same day, because Minister will be here, because to take us through just briefing on the issues on investigations, SIU investigation. Note that obviously because the matters where they are still sub judice, we can't get into the merits of the issues. But to say, because the department is the originator of this investigation, because we are in new parliament, just for them to explain what had happened, what led to this investigations being taken. You might have noted that even this week, the president, and who will be signing that proclamation today, has issued a second, there's a second investigation against post office. There was the first one that is still outstanding. This week the president announced a second one, a second SIU investigation against post office, obviously for the minister to take us through. Then we felt that as well, from here, I think it's important for .za domain to come and explain their mandate, their successes and challenges. We've not interacted with them, so that we know who they are, and so that we are able to start now doing our own oversight, because we would have even engaged with them on that. So that will be that day. The following week, the 5th of September, there's a capacity building workshop. I've received an indication, it's Siemens and Sweden, Swedish company, Swedish government, that have invited us to a training workshop. It was going to be in Pretoria for 2 days. It's a SADC training. This is almost on new trends and in telecommunication and postal services. But because we couldn't go, we thought, let's utilize, because there are sitting days. And we felt that if we are to leave Parliament and we find that there's quorums needed and all those things, possibilities that the Chief Whip will not give us permission to go. So we negotiated to have that workshop here in Cape Town on the 5th of September. It's always good to have other people besides people who are in government sharing the experiences and sharing their information around. It will help us as members so that we have broader view. We are more informed about what is happening. So this, and as well, when we start dealing in detail, you would see what are the global trends on telecommunications, where are we as South Africa, are we making headways, are we still moving in a snail pace. So such workshops, honorable members, you would see them constantly coming in into the program, just for us to interact. It's by the lack of better word when we say workshop, but it's more interaction with various stakeholders on various issues. And some of them do approach us to say they would like to engage with us, and we definitely give them space. And some of them, we will approach them when we feel it's absolutely necessary for us to have an engagement. Then the next one, on the 12th, we are planning a briefing by department and its entities on broadband and schools connectivity. Members would have noted, maybe even over the weekend, there's been an outcry in terms of some of this connection. It's said that it's declining, which I'm not confident to say that it's declining, because if you look at what Telkom, you have everybody connecting. Telkom goes connect, Vodacom connects, Cita connects, Centec connects, USASA connects. There isn't what is coordinated in terms of, I think that's another one who's trying to get in. There isn't coordination of this connectivity in the schools. But secondly, there isn't coordination, but we felt that because education is one of the important issues in the country, and to ensure that there is sustainability of the future generation, this is one of the areas we feel that it needs to be monitored constantly. Then what we would do here would invite a basic education portfolio committee. We'll also see if the department itself is available. So we are also saying the Department of Telecoms must be here, but as well the Department of Basic Education. Because while telecom sector might connect, you are relying on basic education to try and make sure that the teachers are trained, to try and make sure that there's protection of these facilities and the sustainability in what the infrastructure is being brought in. So it will be nice, but again, would want the Basic Education Portfolio Committee, when they do oversight to the schools, where we are not able to, part of what we would want them to do is to check the facilities as well for, on behalf of Parliament as an oversight. That's what we are intending to do here. And then again, briefing by State Information Technology Agency on its mandate, successes and challenges. We felt because they are new into this portfolio as well, we thought that because we didn't have time to really get to know that, interact with them. And members would have noted that SIU as well has been mandated this week to investigate some of the problems in CETA. And I think when Minister comes, would explain what is being investigated here specifically. And then our last day meeting would be, I think I made a mistake, members, we should have also included the third term program here, because we need to adopt it before we go on our recess. So this is the 19th September. It will be briefing by the department, SAPO, CENTEC, and USASA on digital terrestrial television state of readiness. And then we'll include presentation and adoption of our committee program for the next term. So that's what we have, honorable members. I'll open hands for comments, questions, additions, or subtractions. Any comments? Honorable Shin.
Yes, Chair, thank you. I think it's a very comprehensive program. I think we're going to be very, very busy, and I think it touches the main issues that we need to get going with. And I'm pleased that the Minister is going to give us a briefing on the legislative program, because with the split in the departments, there's a lot of uncertainty about, you know, responsibilities in law over instructions and stuff. So I'm pleased that's going to be there.
Thank you very much. Any other comment? Shall we get the program adopted? Honorable Mafula.
Sorry, I move for adoption of the program.
Thank you very much. Seconda. Honorable Doneni seconds. Thank you very much. Sanele, are you, Sandile, are you ready? As I said, I hope honorable members have their copies of the presentation. Okay, over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and morning members. First of all, the presentation, the slides are a bit long, so we are not going to be sort of giving detail to each and every slide, because some of it would cover some of the things that the other slide would have touched on. Basically, the presentation is based on what the Chairperson requested in terms of the sector analysis, the sector orientation, but in terms of the international law, the policies, and the constitution, how, what is the relationship between those, which contains the bulk of what we do as the committee. So that would be the basis of the presentation. Slide two, obviously these are some of our main stakeholders, but others have not been included. This is just the outline of the presentation. And let's start by the definition of the telecommunications, that Newton's definition of telecommunications defines it as an act, the art and science of communicating over distance, whether by phone, fixed or mobile, telegram and radio. Now, this concept brings about two definitions in it. One is the actual act of communicating, as well as the means and the communication infrastructure. So that would be the first thing. But before I just go into the actual introduction, Chairperson, let me just bring a bit of a background to telecommunications in South Africa. During the 1980s, the Minister of Transport, Post and Telecommunications was responsible for telecommunications in South Africa. And telecommunications was provided and regulated by the South African Post and Telecoms, which was headed by the Postmaster General. And obviously, which was run as a government department falling within a cabinet ministry. And of course, it was characterized by the inequalities at the time in terms of the accessibility of telecoms and the affordability. And around about 1992, the then Minister of Transport, Post and Telecommunications compiled a comprehensive study around telecommunications in South Africa, which the result of which resulted into an amendment, a legislative amendment, which separated the postal services and telecommunications. So around about 1991, Telkom was established as a state-owned company dealing with providing telecommunications, whilst a post office concentrated on the postal services. And at the same time, there was a small component within the department which was regulating the sector, meaning the sector was regulated and provided and also provided by government. But it was only in 1994 where the first reform into telecommunications culminated into the Telecommunications Act of 1996. And this is a bit important because then it gives us a step where we are. The Telecommunications Act of 1996 provided, amongst other things, it's about five important things which I've picked up. One, It encouraged the black economic empowerment in the sector. It created the Universal Service Agency, which later became USASA. And it also created, or it made provisions for USAF, which are the funds that industry would then contribute towards the development of the sector. And then it also established the telecommunications regulator, namely the South African Telecoms Regulatory Authority, which was known as SATO. And largely, it gave ministers power to issue policy directives to the regulator. It also allowed ministers to have input in granting of certain telecommunications licenses. So this is where the sort of the transformation of the telecom sector almost happened. And at the time, Telkom was granted an exclusive period, an exclusivity period, until the Telecommunications Act was amended, which also provided for a second national operator in the form of Nortel. But obviously, Nortel was, in terms of licensing, it was licensed around about 2005, 2006. So that's definitely where this is the process that almost kick-started the telecoms and postal services to which we are discussing today. And of course, the department then, it from pre-1994, it had changed its name. You know, it had been telecoms, post, it became Department of Communications, and then quite recently it then became the Department of Telecoms and Postal Services. It is also important to note that, I mean, other countries have also had the name change in their government departments. For instance, in Finland, where the internet connectivity is a constitutional right, the department responsible for telecommunications or the ICT is the Ministry for Transport and Communications. In Australia, since 2007, they've had, it's called, they had Department of Broadband Communications and Digital Economy until towards the late, towards the end of November last year, where they then changed back to the Department of Communications. So it seems like there is this changing of the departments, but obviously our focus would be in terms of the delivery of the departments. So that was just a brief introduction to in terms of what had happened and how it had happened. Then we start by the introduction, for instance, that knowledge is information at work, and that information can only work when there are networks. In the context of the committee, I mean, we could even call ourselves a network committee, given the fact that we're managing CETA. It's all about network. We would be managing CENTEC, well, partly overseeing CENTEC. They're distributing a signal distribution. It's networks. I mean, the don't say they domain name authority. It's also about the governance and the regulations of the namespace, the dot ZA and name authority. So we are more like that. But we have noted that these networks are able to connect, for instance, a German tourist can download information about a B&B in the township. It is also the networks that can also enables an email containing an MPEG file showing the sense of a crop farming or crop disease in the Eastern Cape, in the rural KZN, and anywhere else, to be sent to an agricultural center anywhere in the world. So we deal with networks, we deal with the governing of those things. But we do know that as much as the contribution of the ICT to South Africa's GDP is 7% and also accounts for roughly about 0.5% of the world ICT revenue, there are still areas where ICT connectivity is still non-existent. A case in point, Chairperson, we went to a place called Khamafefe in Limpopo with the previous Chairperson. It was, he was invited there, and he took me with him. There was just nothing, Chairperson. There was no TV signals, no radio signals, no. It was completely empty. It felt like you were somewhere outside of South Africa. So this is where the concentration of our work would definitely be. We all know that, for instance, it's not only in South Africa that had telecom as a monopoly. It was a business, I think it was a government decision all over the world to have monopolies. But obviously the downfall to all the monopolies was as follows, that you had poor network development. There was also the poor universal service obligation, especially in developing countries. The long waiting list, for instance, I mean, if you could imagine, if every one of us were to go and apply for a telecom line, and Telkom is the only one who's serving, I mean, that is massive. It means that you really have to have time in order to wait there in order to be serviced. So these are some of the things that, I mean, obviously in terms of the shortages of skill and all of those things. The key drivers, obviously, of the ICT sector is globalization, which I would mention quite later in the presentation, institutional pressure, economic pressure, and stakeholder pressures. Stakeholder pressures, not in a bad way, Jefferson. The Americans started what is called the corporate political activity in their companies. So what those units would do is that they would try and advise government, try and advise and lobby government towards a better cause. Meaning if government has to take a policy decision, these would be the institutions that would support and guide government. So it's classified under stakeholder pressures, but we know companies do have the corporate political activities happening. So for the purpose of our discussion, we would be fixing this puzzle in terms of understanding the telecommunications and the relationship that telecoms and postal services have. First of all, in terms of the international law, the South Africa is a member and a signatory of the World Trade Organization, and particularly in terms of trading on services. And it also trades on, there's also a specific reference on telecommunication services. And there's a reference paper in terms of some of the commitments that the country is committed to. And the mother body of all regulators in the world is International Telecommunications Union, the ITU, which provides guidelines in terms of spectrum licensing and all of that. Two, the UPU, which is the Universal Postal Union, is also the regulator of postal services. For instance, the obligation by the UPU to South African Post Office or to all postal services serving both, especially those who are serving at reserved in reserved areas like SAPO is that they must make sure that within a radius of 5 kilometers there is a fully functional postal offices, which also can be translated to one fully functional post office for every 10,000 people. So. And secondly, there's also in terms of the international law, we all know that it also provides for the SADC protocol. During the 1996, the former president Nelson Mandela, they signed a protocol on telecommunications, transport, and metallurgy, where the region wanted to make sure that for every development around telecommunications, postal services, broadcasting, there should be uniformity. And for instance, you've seen that through the South Africa's agreeing with the ITU of migrating the analog signal to digital migration, that within the SADC then agreed around about 2012, the SADC ministers responsible for communications took a decision to have a sort of a unique standard for SADC region, which was then DBBT2. So that is also another protocol. Of course, the other protocol relates to a CRASA, which is an organization that is responsible for regulations in the region. So it, whatever policies, whatever national policies and acts will be guided along the lines. Then there are national policies, of course, and before the national policies, what becomes important to know, Chairperson, is that since 1994, South Africa became a constitutional democracy. And Section 16 of the Constitution then guarantees individual right for people to speak, to impart and receive knowledge, which could also be interpreted that you have to have means by which to communicate again. So then the Constitution becomes the key, but also the Constitution must make sure that the South Africa's commitment to international law is also guaranteed. And then there are national policies, for instance, which are the responsibilities of the minister supported by the department, which are articulated in government gazette and often lead towards the promulgation of the act, which is the responsibility of parliament. So in terms of the national policies, for instance, one of those would be the 1996 White Paper on Telecommunications. Now, the vision for the 1996 White Paper communication, it called for affordable communications for all, whether it's business or citizens. And it also acknowledged that the sector was converging in terms of services. I'm sure you have seen that most of the websites of, let's say, print media or newspapers would carry a video of someone being interviewed. Of course, they do not have a license to broadcast, but that's the nature of the convergence of the sector. And you've also seen with some of the broadcasting, licensees, where some of the stories that would not be on air would be written in their website. So the white paper then called for convergence, which later became something. There's also the white paper on the 1998 white paper on postal services and the 1998 paper on broadcasting services, which in a nutshell wanted to create three spheres of broadcasting in South Africa. And obviously there are other applicable laws, for instance, in terms of the CASA Act, which in any case provides for the Complaints and Compliance Committee to actually adjudicate if there are disputes in the Telecommunications Act. But obviously it would be at the level where they are able to do so, because the Competition Act becomes the overall act which I would say supersede every other sector, because the competition act is applicable everywhere. It's not a sector specific legislation. And then obviously the constitution, obviously in terms of the constitution, it also provides for the court licenses to appeal through the courts, the Competition Appeals Court, the Supreme Court of Appeal, including the Constitutional Court. So my intention is that just before I finish, we would be able to have picked up some of the things which are very important in us understanding the telecoms and the postal services within the broader framework of international law, the court, and the constitution. I've touched base on the fact that the reason why, because some people may argue to say, why do you regulate? Because telecommunications is actually borderless. We have seen issues, for instance, last night, a friend of mine was chatting on WhatsApp with my other cousin who lives in Australia, and they were communicating, but why do you regulate? It's not in that context of social media, but it's in the context of making sure that you regulate in order to make sure that you protect and conserve the national resource, which is the spectrum and the numbering. Because if you do not do so, besides the anarchy that might prevail, but you might have dominant players operating everywhere, operating without the guidelines. So they still very much like an era for regulation. And secondly, if you look at the ITU, it also provides that it gives guidance and provides for regulation of signal spillover. For instance, the issue in the case in point here would be the government of Botswana versus Sentech, where, for instance, there was a case which the government of Botswana has won because Sentech sort of signal distribution spilled over in that country, which is not allowed. And obviously, I've just highlighted the slide, so it won't be. And then the government then decided, not just this government, everywhere in the world, government decided that, look, they needed to implement ICT reform. And it was important to do so because they needed to attract foreign direct investments. For instance, some of the licenses that you'd license would come from anywhere in the world, bearing in mind the WTO commitments that South Africa is part of. It was also important to roll out infrastructure and services. In terms of the regulator, it would issue out sort of a number of licenses, for instance, the individual and class license. Some of the licenses which are issued in the context of telecommunications would be the electronic network service, communication services, and the electronic communication services. Meaning, if you provide or if you've been issued with those licenses, you have to invest a lot of money in terms of, for instance, digging up the ground, laying infrastructure, which in essence will create job opportunities, would make sure that there's investment, but there's also the signal and network, which are the services to benefit the general public. It was also, for instance, the regulations are done to also raise revenue. For instance, the regulator collects on an annual basis the spectrum license sort of monies. And the money that it collects, for instance, is then given straight to the National Revenue Fund, which is obviously, managed by the National Treasury. So you needed such things. Of course, in the context of ICASA, there are challenges around how they collect or whether what they collect is actually what they should be charging. But the whole context was to make sure that they collect spectrum fees, and these spectrum fees would assist government. And it was also to ensure that government minimized market failure and monopoly. This is just the relationship I've highlighted in terms of government issuing our policies, and then the regulator would come with the regulations, licenses, and the operators and the market. So this, we'll just pass this one. The degree of which we, in terms of reform, I think to a certain extent, South Africa would be around about number four, the multiple in terms of the number of operators. But if you look at what then becomes, what determines a competitive sector, which is pricing, it's a bit difficult to really understand where South Africa falls, because if you look at the research which was done by the ICT, I think it's AREA, it's a research ICT, Africa ICT, I think, in 2002, out of the 46 countries which were surveyed in terms of the mobile prepaid prices, South Africa was ranked number 30 out of the 46 countries. Last year, I think they improved, but slightly, because part of the problem is that I think I stand to be corrected. I think it's only Cell C who has had a very, like a solid pricing, because some of the other operators would be using promotions in the main, and promotions do not really count in terms of pricing. Yes, that's, yes, yeah, I forgot to mention that, yeah. Yeah, it was 30 out of 46 countries in the continent, which was expensive. I did mention this in terms of the postal union, and I think we can just skip it. National policies we've mentioned. Of course, the act, obviously, the Telecommunications Act, which we'll talk about it at the later stage, which was then repealed to make way for the ECA. It also empowered, like I said, the minister to issue policy directives to ICASA, and in the context of the minister issuing out policy directives, the minister must also take into consideration the constitution of the country, the international law, and everything else. So the minister cannot do something which is opposite of what the international law is saying, opposite to what the constitution is saying. Likewise, ICASA, when they publish the regulations, they must be mindful of what are the guiding or the fundamentals that guides their operations. We have mentioned these, but of course the other one which we haven't really mentioned was the Electronic Communication and Transaction Act, which really is the act, a funding act, which created or established the .za domain name authority to manage the space. We've had a CENTEC Act. Basically, the CENTEC Act was created as a result of or moving CENTEC out of the SABC, because CENTEC used to be a division of the SABC. It was providing signal distribution as a division of the SABC, but obviously the need became, obviously the requirement for signal distribution became apparent, and then the act was then established to actually create CENTEC as a state-owned entity. In terms of the convergence, because the Telecommunications Act, starting from the white paper on telecommunications, had also envisaged the convergence of the act. What then happened was there was a merger of the IBA, which is the Independent Broadcasting Act, which was regulating the broadcasting sector, which merged with the South African Telecommunications and Regulatory Authority, which was managing the telecommunications. and they became one because they met. And of course, then they became, you know, the ICASA Act was then established because it's more of an administrative act. But the question which comes, or with the question that one might ask is ICASA in its entirety a Chapter 9 institution? Because if you go to a constitution, you'll find that it's only IBA, it's the Independent Broadcasting Act, the institute that was there. It doesn't say anything about SATO. So now that it merged, should we really be saying, or should we be saying, the broadcasting part of ICASA is actually a Chapter 9 institution? Of course, I can answer those questions. Maybe if someone, a legal guru, would help us to understand. But it is important to understand that part because ICASA, I think, is the only regulator which is a Chapter 9 institution. Of course, there are countries where there are no regulators. For instance, the Kingdom of Swaziland, there are no regulators there. The regulator would be the king. But other countries would have sector-specific regulators, telecoms and broadcasting. But many countries are moving towards a converged sort of regulator because owing to the convergence of the sector. And of course, ICASA acts through a council. There are 9 councillors which are full-time in ICASA. And part of the problem is that obviously chairperson is the role clarification around the individual councillors. It's not for me to say, but we have seen towards the 2012-2013 financial year where individual councillors took responsibility of ensuring that general managers will report directly to them, which was a governance issue as well. It should not have happened, because then what happens to the CEO who's employed? But this is what happened.
Sandile, the issue of 9 councillors for ICASA, on their website they've only got 7 names listed. The Act says 7. But yet I know that, for example, Councillor Pillay isn't listed on the website at all. She's vanished. So I'm not sure, and I went back through the various amendments and things, and I couldn't find out where to change from 7 until 9. We've always accepted it was 9, but when I actually went to, you know, try to find out where Councillor Pillay was, I thought she dropped, you know, I then became terribly confused as to where the legislative amendment was. So obviously we don't need to answer it now, but if you could find for me some regulation or some amendment that I couldn't find. Thank you.
Okay. No, thanks. I think, what section is this? Section 5 of the ICASA Act, it says the constitution, the subheading there says the constitution of and the appointment of councillors to ICASA. 1, the council consists of a chairperson and 8 other councillors.
What you are referring to, is it on the amendment?
Thanks. And the other one which obviously we do know is with the ICASA Act, for instance, there's maximum public participation through the nomination process. Then the National Assembly then recommends appointment by obviously by the minister. But if you look at the seat act, I mean, I'm not too familiar with it, but I brushed through it. First of all, the board members are given a 3-year term. And, I mean, we know that government operates in terms of the mid-term term, the strategy framework is it's a 5-year plan. And there's also, it's unclear how these board members are nominated. And the sitter, yeah. It's very unclear how they are nominated, whether there's at all the public involvement. If you look at the post service, for instance, the postal service, it's almost the same, similar issue where, for instance, if you look at it currently, because there's no clarification in terms of what happens when a chairperson of the board resigns or leaves. So we have had a South African Post Office having an acting chairperson for quite some time. So I'm not sure whether such things should be really clarified in the Act or what should be, but at least there should be something which would be clear, because, I mean, I would argue that if you then advertise and, well, you call for nomination, and it would be too late, in my view, to get someone who's going to become a chairperson of SAPO, for instance, because that person might not have the knowledge that the current people are. But in terms of the actual vacancy, it would be saying you must call for the nomination for the appointment of the chairperson of the board. So it's a bit tricky. And just to move on, chairperson, these are some of the sort of the provisions of the Act which makes, for instance, some of the regulations that are published by ICASA have to be approved by the Minister of Communication. And of course, in terms of the interconnection, there's the whole chapter of interconnection and facilities in the ECA. And I'm not convinced whether that has really been implemented. And it also determines fees for the telecommunication services in terms of the mobile termination rates. We've seen that through the insistence of this committee, ICASA has done some work in terms of reducing them. But like I said, even the current studies are actually showing that we are not yet there. And of course, the annual contributions for users, they contribute to ICASA and then ICASA transfers it to users. It's one of those. This is just what ICASA would be doing in terms of frequency band plan, the numbering plans, holding inquiries. At some stage, if I'm not sure, the committee was quite uncomfortable with some of the inquiries that ICASA was having, because if they were to license, let's say, a broadcasting or individual or class license in a province like Eastern Cape, for instance, but it would hold hearings in Sandton. So the committee at some point, you'd also correct me, Ms. Shin, there was of the view that where you have determined that there should be a radio station through, for instance, the research or what, or you should make sure that such inquiries are held at that particular province so that you maximize participation. We've spoken about this Act, which is regulating everyone in the sector. But the telecommunications, even after it was repealed, it was repealed, but the ECA still contains the three fundamental ways in terms of what ICASA should be doing or what the regulator should be doing. For instance, it says some of the fundamental rules that were set was, for instance, no one should provide the telecommunication services or signal without, for instance, a license. And it also called for what chairperson was talking about in terms of the E-rate. I think it's chapter 73, if I'm not mistaken. That, for instance, last year we had about 12,000, I think it was 12 million learners in all public schools of about 24,601 schools. Once, in terms of the e-rate, it says once they've been connected, schools will be charged 50% of their internet connectivity. So those are the rules that ICASA will set to telecommunications sector, particularly in terms of connectivity. Number two, it also says ICASA must make sure that, ICASA must also make sure that the minister responsible for government communications must be provided a platform for government and state entities to communicate with the public. Let me just find that the actual section, but then I'll take. And similarly, it also called for the Director General of the department to actually create an ICT museum to ensure that the ICT evolution in the country is captured in line with the National Heritage Act. And I'm not convinced whether that has happened, but I stand to be corrected. Obviously, when the ICASA, the Telecommunications Act was repealed, the ECA carried some of the things, which included, for instance, the ICASA Act, and then the Universal Service Agency, which was then created by Telecommunications Act in 1996, changed its name slightly. It became the Universal Service Access and Agency of South Africa, USASA now, because the USA was now clashing with the actual country in America. Of course, the Electronic Communications and Transaction Act does not regulate any telecommunications in the sector, but it guarantees that the emails, the website that you would have obviously established would be working. And Chapter X establishes the .za, the .za name authority to assume the responsibilities of this task. Like I said, I mean, this is just basic information, the type of regulator, sector-specific, and converged. I'm still not convinced. Of course, South Africa had, in terms of the white paper, they had envisioned the convergence, but I'm quite not sure whether ICASA, in a true sense of the word, is a converged regulator. But other countries have since become fully converged. And I've just named some of these countries. Of course, the spectrum monitoring. This is basically what the regulator would do after the policy directive from a minister. For instance, the spectrum allocation and management. ICASA has been doing this, but I'm not sure whether they've really been monitoring because of the shortages of equipment. But there was also a move towards establishing or creating a spectrum management agency, which was then referred back to the ICT review panel. So maybe after the ICT review panel had conducted and concluded its work, we'll see whether ICASA still continues with the spectrum allocation or an agency would have been established by then. Interconnection rates, we've spoken about that. The type approval, I'm sure members, you must have noticed that when you buy electronic equipment, at the back of your equipment, whether it's laptop, it's phone, it would be ICASA approved. Even some of the kids' toys would have, if they are electronic in nature, they would have a type approval. But at the same time, there's an outcry that some of the gadgets that comes into the country are not type approved because they come to different means. One of the challenges in the sector, obviously, is that CASA does not fall part, or the department is not part of the team of at customs at the airport. So things could come through and they wouldn't know. And in terms of the actual act, if ICASA were to go and, for instance, through their peace officers to go and investigate maybe a shop owned by me that is selling some of the stuff, it would have to apply to the court, get a court order, and notify the person of the date and time of which they are going to. Obviously, then it means that the person would know that the regulators are coming. So if I've been selling blankets, but behind blankets I'm selling cell phones, I would know that the regulator is coming on this day, and then I'll take my things and just pack them at home. When they come and search, they won't find anything. So there's a bit of a problem in terms of the type of approval, because some of the gadgets obviously are disruptive to the license operators in terms of whether it's signal or some of these things. And there must be some way of addressing in terms of this issue with customs in terms of type approval. But of course, even those which are type approved, because it would be one equipment that would be tested. So the way it works is the bulk is like a mass production. They will test one product and feel that this is fine, and then so everything else that would be produced would be fine because they've tested it. So we're not sure whether you can send the correct product for type approved and then later you do something else with those things. So there are, so that, there are those challenges around type approval. Oops. It's a percentage. My apologies. It is a percentage in terms of what the allocation of the task. Yes, thanks. My apologies for that. I think we are now at the stage where we've completed our puzzle. We know what are the international laws, the ITU governing the sector, the broadcasting digital migration, which hopefully the South Africa would not. In terms of the, for instance, the SADC protocol, South Africa has missed two deadlines in terms of the digital migration. One was in 2011, which South Africa missed, and the other one was in 2012, September, I think, but there was a soft launch in Kimberley towards December or November, but it had missed the early deadline, but obviously it was just... It was delayed by months. Of course, we know that the constitution, after international laws, then there's a constitution which really governs our sector. The national policy papers, we've seen that, for instance, the white paper on telecommunication, on broadcasting, for instance, it emanated into the Broadcasting Act and the Telecommunications and the Competition Court. Chairperson, I'm speaking under absolutely no authority on this, but based on what the department would be doing, the new department, as it stands, the minister who has the authority to issue policy directives to ICASA, in terms of the law, would be the Minister of Telecommunications and Postal Services. So, yeah, I think the mandate of the department, basically, the mandate of the department is to create policies to make sure that the environment is favorable for business and socio-economic development. It's important to stress that the department is not really like an operational department. It creates policies and it works through entities. So when the department presents its threat plan, part of what we need to be dealing with is to really understand in terms of the plan, is this plan for government or it would have an impact in terms of how the sector operates? because the plans that the department would present to Parliament must be a plan that says, this is what is going to be happening if you do this to some of our entities supporting us. If we do this, this is what we intend to see as an outcome in terms of the private sector, because the bulk of what the telecommunication services, whether it's internet, would be, is provided by the internet service providers. So the policy function of the department is going to be under a scrutiny, because if the policies are right, you definitely have. But at the same time, Jefferson, for instance, we've seen with the ICASA where they've issued some of the regulations without RIA, the regulatory impact assessment. Whether that was intentionally or not, the downfall to it is sometimes it will take you a year or two to actually conduct the actual RIA. So by the time you are able to go and implement, given the speed at which the sector operates, you may find that some of the things that you thought would make an impact would not have impact. So we must also somehow understand that policy, maybe in regulation, would always come towards the end, because the operators would have the better understanding of the know-how and all of that. But basically, the department would obviously be dealing with the ICT policy, the broadband network, and the digital migration policy. There have been some arguments which the academics have written extensively that part of the digital migration, except that it would generate jobs, create a sort of many channels, which in turn will make sure that you have the creative industry, because in terms of let's say 24-hour scheduling of a TV channel, you need so many sort of dramas and movies. But the argument is saying, most importantly, this thing is done to ensure that we have the spectrum, which would be useful for broadband. So it's important in that context, if we take that argument, that digital migration happens. The mandate of USASA, which is one of the agencies, of course, it's part of the mandate basically is to also support, advise the minister and the regulator in terms of the definitions of the underserved and underserviced areas. So they must, from time to time, they must advise both the minister and the regulator. And it has also been given the mandate in terms of Section 88 of the ECA Act to make sure that, one, it uses the USAF amount to really subsidize roughly about 5 million households, TV-owning households. At the time, it was 5 million. I'm not sure now, because the statistics have also given us something else. But the subsidy does not cover everything. It's a 70% subsidy. So, yeah, that should be the mandate of USASA. No, I've just gone back. My apologies. The E-Skills Institute, of course, it's about e-skilling of the nation through different means, whether it's television production and all of that. Centec is a signal distributor to both free-to-air. Free-to-air would mean your ETVs, the public broadcaster, some of the commercial as well as the community broadcasters. But the constitution also provides for self-provisioning, meaning if you don't want Centec to distribute signal to your sort of whether to your project, I'll just call it a project for now, you can also self-provide. But the advantage of Centec is that once you are with them, the listeners can be able to pick up your signal if they are driving, because, I mean, they can switch on their radio. Because most of the, in fact, all of the stations which are all of the stations that are on our cars are actually stations that Centec provides signals to. And then there is post office, which Chairperson has given the problems there. And I've just included the digital migration value chain, for instance, that in 2006, South Africa agreed with the international law again that it was going to move their analog signal distribution to digital by 2015 June. And then what then happens is that the minister issued two policy statements. The one was in 2008 and the one was in 2012. And then in terms of the regulator, it had to issue regulations in terms of the frequency plan, the channels, meaning it would be licensing at, I don't know when, but it should start licensing at different channels, television channels. Then there was the transmission, which is, as Centec says, they are 80%, but in other provinces they are 100% complete. My apologies. And then obviously we, in terms of number four, the marketing and consumer support. Yeah, the department says that they've been rolling out this consumer awareness campaign, which is a joint responsibility of the department and all of its entities. Whether it's making impact because of it, already people are, no, most people are not aware of it, I'm not sure. But I think most importantly, the standard is ready, but I think we are stuck between number three and number four, manufacturing of set-top boxes. Chairperson, just before I finish, I think the last year, I think there was a set-top box which was already in the market also. And I'm not sure what then becomes, because already there will be set-top boxes in the market. And most countries who have really done well in terms of the digital migration, it took them a minimum of 3 years to beef up and campaign in terms of the marketing and communicating, because digital migration is not a consumer-driven project. It's a supply-driven project. So you have to convince someone why they should, for instance, buy the digital migration. So in South Africa, at some stage, we had a three-year dual illumination, meaning in order to make sure that people are comfortable and they can see the result, Centec was going to provide signal distribution for both analog and digital, so that if you switch it on, you can see, oh, okay, the picture quality is better than this, and then you are convinced. At this stage, I mean, based on the presentation by Centec earlier this year, obviously there won't be a 3 years, I mean, because 2015 June is next year. So I think that the marketing of the digital migration would become a major activity for the department. And just before I end off, Chairperson, I think as a committee we must then probably at this stage select one team which we are going to support. The MTN 8 is starting. It's a telecommunications entity. So I can say maybe we must support chiefs. When Telkom Cup is starting as well, we must also support chiefs, because these are some of our entities which are supporting the development of our football. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Sandile. No, I think you have the it's seconded by the chair, the team of choice for supporting. thank you very much. I think, honourable members, the intention here was just for him to share with us in terms of where, what fits where, more than anything as a basis for discussion, so that we, as we said, as we go along, assist each other in terms of understanding the sector and the complexity of the sector. I noted Honourable Mackenzie has got a hand up. Members, any comments, questions? Honourable Shin, Honourable Zotis, in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Mr. Nene. I presume you're no relation of the Finance Minister. We don't do nepotism in communications. Just in terms of the International Telecommunications Union and the UPU, given the makeup of, and I know my colleague, Honourable Ndlozi, would appreciate this question, given the neoliberal makeup of institutions such as the World Bank, for example, and the agenda, who sets the agenda for these international regulatory bodies, and how is the membership composed? I'm not sure if you have this information. If you don't, it's fine. Perhaps you could bring it before the committee at another stage. I'd just be interested to know in terms of who makes the decisions, what the decision-making processes are, who sets the standards, and our influence as a nation and as a SADC community in those bodies. Thank you.
Thank you, Jefferson. Sadly, my question is more of one that still causes me a tremendous confusion, and I hope that you might be able to clarify the difference about spectrum. As to who is responsible for is allocating it and assigning it. Now, the minister either allocates or assigns, and ICASA does. Can you please explain to me what the difference is and who is responsible for what? But thank you for a very comprehensive presentation. I think it's going to be a good foundation going forward.
Thank you.
Chair, I might just a comment regarding the charges of their services, whereas people make such a multi-trillion dollar transactions hourly. That for me, it goes a long way, because whatever we do in all departments, we protest, employment. So job seekers are going to have it difficult, to market jobs, because even when they advertise, they just give you the cell number and not the landline most of the time. So it's going to be difficult for them to access the services. Maybe it should be one of the factors that you should focus on to deal with the charges, because it would be difficult for them. And also the areas where they still do not have connectivity, maybe it will be our focus area when you do oversight. So those two comments.
Thank you very much. I know he had initially said to me, I must not allow questions. But I said it's part of his training. Maybe it can be a culture. just respond where you are able to. But I think the intention as well, members, is to, what he was trying to do, spark questions, spark debates, so that we start knowing where there are areas and where there are gaps in terms of policies. When the department and these entities come here, these are some of the things that we need to be, start following up, start knowing that there's a gap here, there's an issue that we need to deal with. I mean, I like how he was dealing with the issue of ICASA. That question, it's us as legislature needs to clarify the standing of ICASA. Is it a Chapter 9 institution? If it is, how do we strengthen the legislation to make sure that it is fully? Or whether if they deal with other things, how to deal with it. So we've got to clarify that. I mean, if we can't, then we're confusing the whole sector. But one of the things, again, that we need to deal with is there's a lot of money that all these other entities are doing. But the output, if you can look at all of them in terms of, ICT, the money that goes, even on government itself, we're spending a lot of money, but the output doesn't show you in terms of us moving forward. And I like the question of Mackenzie, who sets the agenda? I mean, you look at .za domain with the influence of America, because we do not have any, none of the countries have authority over domains. And that's why you have a person sort of seconded to come and sit in .za domain on behalf, looking after the interest of the U.S. So that's some of the things that, and how do we see ourselves moving forward? I mean, in this context, but Sandile, let me give, why do I call you Sandile? I said in interviews yesterday. Okay.
Thanks, Shabbat. Your questions are a bit difficult for me, but maybe let me start with the ICANN, where, for instance, in terms of the .za name authority, obviously in terms of its reporting, partly it reports to ICANN, which is, I think it's an international body for all the managing all the domain spaces around the world. Obviously, in terms of even the board membership, one person would have to be seconded there. Well, whether to look up to serve the interests of the ICANN, but I'm not sure about that. But if I may start by saying, for instance, in terms of the monopoly, you know, we have had, for instance, Telkom operating as a fixed line operator. And then, obviously, at a later stage, the Act made provision for a second network operator in the form of Nortel. And there's talks that Nortel has been or could be acquired by Vodacom. So there are discussions. So already there could be an element of monopoly in terms of the fixed line, DSL, and so forth. The ITU... Mr. McKenzie, I'm going to answer you in terms of what I've read, not my own opinion. In terms of the countries, most of the countries, including South Africa, has said there. And one of the things that I've read, the critics, especially in terms of the digital migration, have raised the issue that, for instance, South Africa chose 2015. There was a lineage in all African countries to choose 2015 because the decision at that time, it was not as urgent in terms of the digital dividend for African countries. But in 2006 we chose 2015. So maybe you could have chosen 2020, which was also given as an alternative. So because I don't sit there, I'll just give you a time. They would always say that it's an agenda of the developed world in terms of the digital migration. Of course, there are benefits to it, because if you look at it, I mean, if you have more television channels and radio on TV, then it means then you are boosting your creative industry, because it means you have to have more local production. It means more people would be employed. Because you are most likely to have, for instance, an additional of 10 channels, whether it's from ETV or from SABC. And in terms of the scheduling, like I said, if you're going to schedule a 24-hour sort of channel, you would need so many of your drama, so many of these things. So it's a development, it's an agenda of the developed world, according to what I've read. But there are benefits. Whether we might, I don't know, but I'll leave it at that stage. Ms. Sheen, the spectrum, you see, part of the problem is that the minister would issue the policy directives in terms of the spectrum, and then the allocation and the assignment of the spectrum, I would say in most countries, is then given to the regulator, because then most regulators would be independent in terms of how they are funded, independent from government capture and obviously from commercial capture. But in our context, I think the department would answer that question. It's like, for instance, the issuing out of, let's say, a major telecoms licensee. that the Act makes reference to the fact that the minister would have an input in granting of. But in other licensees, whether it's broadcasting or telecoms, the minister is not there. The ICASA is conducting business as it normally does. So it's a difficult one, Jeff. Yeah, it is a difficult thing.
Any other comments, members? Thank you very much. I think really we really appreciate the work that has been done, Santi. Really, it asks what we need to do and really sparking those questions that we want to start follow on. Obviously, there are a number of things that we would have to pull again, follow on as we go on. There's a lot of work in the sector. There's a lot of areas that we need to start pulling on and getting our country really to be able to compete globally in terms of the sector, telecommunications. Members, if there's anything or there's nothing, I think that's it for the day. Want to say something?
Yeah, sorry, Chair. I know it's very rude. There was a question around the coverage. The areas which are not really covered. Okay, I can prepare such a document. And you'll find that even the SABC is not covered in those areas, yeah.
The suggestion she was saying that we need to take it up as part of oversight. We need to look at those areas. For example, she identified two things that we must still deal with. This issue, cost to communicate, affordability of communication, and then again the issue of coverage, that when we do our oversight, one of the things is to check in these areas where there is no coverage and just bring the stakeholders in terms of trying, because we do know that there are certain areas in the country that you can't find, for example, network signal. Other areas, there's no television signals. So it's a matter that she's saying, can we look into it and put it into the program when we start doing oversight and to highlight that light so that our entities and everybody else can start paying attention to them. Unfortunately, Parliament has not adopted those rules. I would love to. I'm one person that is very technologically friendly, and I believe in paperless. That's why I always carry this. So Skyping and all those things, it's some things that I like. Unfortunately, it will be regarded as a non-committee city if we do Skype everywhere we are. But I think, members, for us it was really important. We set aside time. And these are some of the things, once we have time, we'll try and slot in, as I said, just to make sure that all of us are also kept abreast. It's an industry that is growing fast. There's another newsletter that is electronic that members can keep abreast. It's Tech Central, I just learned it recently. But it keeps updating on the issues that are happening within the sector as well. So we'd have to keep on making sure that we are in time with what is happening in the sector. But just to thank you, members, I think we started our work in a very, very difficult environment with the rushing with the EPCs. But I think now we are really getting into the gist of the issues. And I hope you'd find time to rest in these 2 weeks. And then so that when we come back, one is a leave type, and one is constituency. Unfortunately for some of us, there is none of the above in school throughout. So we'll come back and start with the 22nd. We haven't looked at oversight for now, members, because there's so much work that we need to do. And possibly we'll start looking at other things for the third term, because we started. So I'm running in terms of, we'll have 3 terms this year. So for the third term, we'll start working around the program and putting together the things that we'll be doing. The difficulty with the third term is that we've got BRRR, budget review processes. So I'm going to ask members to start familiarizing themselves with what needs to happen during BRRR, because it's another marathon. So that members, if Sandile, you can try, and maybe if there's something from committee, we don't have a content advice. If there's something from committee section that just explains BRRR, what is it and what is hoping to do, if we can get it to members, so that by the time we get to that process, members are aware of what we need to do and what is expected of us. In that note, members, thank you very much. Enjoy your day. The meeting is adjourned.